Next case is United States v. Berry. Judge Sparks has recused himself from participation in this case. We are very happy to have with us today our old colleague, Senior Judge Chip Erdman, who will be sitting in his place and participate on the record in the case.
Not that old.
Not that old.
But thank you very much for coming all the way from Montana into lousy weather to hear the case. Is the appellant ready to argue? The government? Appellant may argue.
May it please the court, my name is Lieutenant Commander Jacob Muche, and I, along with Mr. David Sheldon, Commander Brian Miser, and Commander Rich Federico, represent Special Warfare Operator Senior Chief Keith Berry, the appellant in this case. Chief Judge Stuck, you respectfully request 3 minutes in rebuttal.
Granted.
As a debate judge found, the convening authority, Rear Admiral Patrick Lorge, did not take the final action he wanted to take in Senior Chief Berry's case. Because of the pressures that the Judge Advocate General of the Navy, Vice Admiral Dorenzi, and her deputy, Vice Admiral Crawford, brought to bear on Admiral Lorge, he approved Senior Chief Berry's sentence even though Admiral Lorge wanted to disapprove the findings. And after a two-day fact-finding hearing, the Dubay judge found several reasons for why Admiral Lorge was inclined to disapprove the findings, but the most notable reason is this. In the Joint Appendix at 599, quote, Rear Admiral Lorge believed then and continues to believe the appellant's guilt was not proven beyond a reasonable doubt at his court-martial, end quote. That is what the Dubay judge found, and based on the record developed at the Dubay hearing, Senior Chief Berry now respectfully asks this court to dismiss his conviction with prejudice for two reasons. First, unlawful command influence directly impacted the findings and sentence, and second, dismissal with prejudice is the only remedy that will cure both the effect of this unlawful command influence on Senior Chief Berry's case as well as its effect on the public perception of fairness in the military justice system. Turning first to the unlawful command influence and its impact on the findings and sentence. In Senior Chief Berry's case, the most concerning violation of Article 37 came from Admiral Crawford's two meetings with Rear...
Can you please start, counsel, by explaining how Article 37 applies to the players in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. The Article 37, the language that no person subject to the code may attempt by any unauthorized means to influence the action of a convening authority with respect to his judicial actions. And it applies to all members subject to the code. In this case, Admiral Dorenzi and Admiral Crawford are both subject to the code. And then the no authorized means portion of that language, this court can look to Article 6B and 10 U.S.C. 5148 Echo 2 as where the authority for the channels of communication come from. Starting first with 10 U.S.C. 5148 E2, it provides that no officer is permitted to interfere with the ability of judge advocates assigned to military units to give independent legal advice to commanders. So the advice flowing to the commander must be given by the SJA in an independent way. Article 6B then directs the commander to, at all times, consult with his SJA in the administration of military justice. So you have the channels flowing back and forth there, creating independent advice given to a convening authority so that they can make independent decisions as provided under the UCMJ.
Consul, let's go back a minute to Article 37 and the language of Article 37. In your earlier statement, you just quoted that any unauthorized means influence the action. You didn't talk about the language that attempting to coerce. Do you see that as two separate methods of establishing unlawful command influence?
Well, yes, Your Honor, in terms of the coercion and influence would go at the way in which the influence is brought to bear on the convening authority. That said, as this court discussed in United States v. Boyce, the key of the analysis is the effect, not the knowledge or the intent. And so whether it's influence or coerce, if that impacted the convening authority's decision, especially on the findings and sentence,
So is it your position that there is no intent element?
No, Your Honor. It is the knowledge or intent is not the key to the analysis. It's the effect on the convening authority here. And the effect from that influence can be seen in the way that Admiral Loris describes his thought process when he was taking the final action.
I don't want to belabor this because it may be a little bit off the point since you're not relying on the attempt to coerce. But to me, it seems like coerce, if you attempt to coerce somebody, you must have some intent. And if you attempt to influence by any unauthorized means, maybe there isn't any intent there.
Yes, Your Honor. I think, though, that there can be unintentional unlawful command influence where it impacts the findings and sentence. So in this case, with regards to Admiral Dorenzi, her influence, as the judge found, she did not intend to influence Admiral Lorge in Senior Chief Berry's case. She didn't have knowledge of that case. Yet when Admiral Lorge is describing his thought process, there is an impact upon him that enters into his decision-making process that's brought to bear on his final action in Senior Chief Berry's
case. When he talked to her, it hadn't even been referred, had it?
No, Your Honor.
So why isn't that a classic example of UCI in the air? We've spoken about that in our case precedent. We say that UCI in the air does not count, essentially. Here, as the Chief Judge was just saying, this case was not before Admiral Lorge at that time. Why do the comments made by Admiral Dorenzi factor in here?
Yes, Your Honor, and there are two points to that in response. The first one is she's in the discussion. So the discussion about the political environment is one thing. When she starts talking, though, about the administration of military justice and that Admiral Lorge's ability to take action on findings in sexual assault cases is tenuous, she starts talking about the administration of military justice. And the second piece on that is it enters into his deliberative process when he's making a decision in this case.
So is it, we all know from torts, this concept of a thin-skulled plaintiff, sometimes referred to as eggshell plaintiff, is that who Admiral Lorge was, this thin-skulled plaintiff, this person who we're supposed to look at and say, gee, some statement might affect some convening authority in some manner, so nobody's supposed to say anything to anybody at any time?
No, Your Honor. I would say it's the inverse. Here, Admiral Lorge is not a thin-skulled plaintiff. Admiral Lorge is a courageous individual, and it speaks to the pressure, the amount of pressure that was brought to bear on him when taking this action that he went against this genuinely held belief.
Can his SJ or Deputy SJA commit unlawful command influence against their client, their convening authority? By giving incorrect advice or seeking to influence him via their position?
Your Honor, in the instance of giving incorrect advice, that, I think that would be a separate analysis. Again, here, though, any person...
I mean, intentionally, let's say intentionally giving incorrect advice to seek to influence the outcome.
Your Honor, it would depend on the advice. Erroneous advice from the SJA alone, though, may not be enough to constitute unlawful command influence.
I just have a simple question, which is, can a convening authority staff judge advocate or deputy staff judge advocate unlawfully influence a convening authority under Article 37?
Your Honor, that would be authorized communication. So when he's giving advice, that communication is authorized under Article 6B. In fact, it's required because the convening authority shall at all times communicate directly with the SJA.
I understand that. I'm asking a different question, which is, can that construct, can unlawful command influence ever occur in that construct between a staff judge advocate and a convening authority under the statute, Article 37?
Your Honor, I'm hesitant to say that there's no circumstance where it would be, but I don't see any unauthorized means doesn't apply in that sense because this is authorized. So I'm not thinking of an instance where an SJA would run afoul of that language in Article 37.
Counsel, may I ask two questions about the interpretation of Article 37? When you say unauthorized means, does that mean something that's specifically prohibited, or does it just mean there's no authorization for doing it?
I believe it's not. There's no authorization for doing it. That's.
Do you have a case on that?
Not specifically, Your Honor, that comes to mind in terms of the authorization with the advice given to the convening authority, except. In this case, specifically with the facts of this case, both Admiral Dorenzi and Admiral Crawford, when asked if they could provide advice to a convening authority, a regional commander as a convening authority, both agreed that it would be improper for them to do so. And so,
but was that because it was prohibited or there was just no authorization to do it?
I think both, Your Honor. It's prohibited in a sense that the Judge Advocate General and the Deputy Judge Advocate General are responsible to the entire community, both the prosecution and the defense, as well as the victim legal counsel. And so it would not be proper for them to take sides in an individual military justice case.
May I ask my other question, which is the word attempt, does that refer only or modify only the word attempt to coerce, or does it also modify influence? So is it attempt to coerce or attempt by any means to influence, or does attempt only modify coerce?
Your Honor, I believe it applies to both coerce and influence.
And so then there'd have to be an intent to influence, wouldn't there? An intent to influence by unauthorized means.
Your Honor, again, I go back to this court's language in the United States v. Boyce, where the key of the analysis is not the knowledge or intent, but the effect. And here the effect is clear on Admiral Lorge in his testimony describing his thought process.
That was language used in a particular context. I don't know that it was intended to apply generally to actual unlawful command influence, was it?
I don't know, Your Honor, and that's something that, if the court would like, I can go back to the drafters and analysis determined, but I don't know specifically off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Counsel, if you just had Admiral Crawford's actions in this case, would that be sufficient to find UCI, or are you saying it is a mandatory component of your analysis what Admiral Durenzi said and did?
Admiral Durenzi's actions are not a mandatory component, Your Honor. Admiral Crawford's actions here are really the focus of the unlawful command influence because they came specifically to this case. And so turning to the unlawful command influence that flowed out of Admiral Crawford's meetings with Admiral Lorge, the most notable is the phone call that happened just before Admiral Lorge took action in this case. So prior to that, his SJA come to him with this idea that he could put language in the convening authority's action that would prompt the appellate courts to take action. And the Dubé judge made a few findings here that are significant. One, that Admiral Lorge and Admiral Crawford, during that phone call, discussed, quote, the proposed plan for action, i.e. putting language in the action that would communicate Rear Admiral Lorge's reservations about the case, end quote. So they're talking about specific language in the convening authority action that doesn't give the relief that Admiral Lorge wanted to give, which was to disapprove the findings. And this is the problem there, and the judge found this as well, quote, Rear Admiral Lorge left that telephone call with the impression that this was the best he could do in relation to the appellant's case, end quote. That's in the joint appendix at 602. So not only in form is this unauthorized because it's the Deputy Judge Advocate General, Commander, Naval Legal Service Command providing advice in a specific action in a specific case. In substance, that's wrong because that wasn't the best he could do if his intent was to disapprove the findings. And that impacted Admiral Lorge's final decision in this case. Is there was significant testimony throughout the debate hearing from Admiral Lorge talking about the gumbo that he was considering as he was making this decision, about the box that he was placed in when making this decision. And
why can't we say he placed himself in a box by not having the courage of his convictions to do what he knew was right?
Your Honor, again, I think that speaks to the level of pressure that was brought to bear on Admiral Lorge in this case. The role of the Staff Judge Advocate and the Judge Advocate General, the Deputy Judge Advocate General, should be to protect the process here so that Lorge can make an independent decision. And that simply did not happen. And again, going to the remedy in this case, dismissal with prejudice, looking to the court's language from United States v. Respect, when an error so obvious and egregious as to impact the essential fairness and integrity of the military justice system, the curtailment of a convening authority's independence goes to the very fairness and integrity of the system. I mean, the convening authority is central to so many aspects of our military justice process, from referral to member selection to final action, and curtailing the convening authority's ability to make independent decisions.
Well, curtailing suggests that it was that there was an actual impediment, right? Curtailment, to me at least, suggests that they are somehow shackled and unable to do what they want to do. In this case, he was warned about basically taking the facts in the light most favorable to your client, right? He was sort of warned off doing what was right. That's not a curtailment.
Your Honor, I would...
I hesitate to say that there are many officers serving on active duty in the United States military that would do the right thing no matter what the possible repercussions to their career might be.
Your Honor, and I would again look at the effect on Admiral Lorch from the pressure that was brought to bear on him. And framing it in the context of the language this court used in the United States v. Boyce, was there an improper manipulation of the criminal justice process which negatively affected the fair handling and or disposition of the case? And here...
I'm taking issue with the word that you're using. I'm not suggesting that I think that what happened is correct. But curtailment, I think, is too strong of a word.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, why wouldn't a new trial appropriately cleanse any UCI if we were to decide that UCI occurred here?
Yes, Your Honor. A new trial does not cure the harm here. One, the Senior Chief Perry. So in June 2015, Admiral Lorch had made a decision that he wanted to disapprove the findings, and as the debate judge found, likely order a new trial. That was in June 2015. Since then, Senior Chief Perry has served the duration of his confinement, and there's no way to give him that lost time back. And then also, sending it back for a new trial brings all the pressures back to bear that were already there. There's been no curative measures here by the government in this case. And
so is it your position that the high-profile nature of this case means that a new trial, there is no cure that could result because going forward, any convening authority would continue to feel this aura of compulsion?
No, Your Honor. I guess my point in this specific instance, the way in which the pressure was brought to bear on Admiral Lorch and impacted his decision on the findings, that strikes at the very heart of fairness in the military justice system, and that dismissal with prejudice is required to remedy, I guess, to restore the public perception of fairness in the military justice system.
Well, that goes to apparent UCI. If it's actual UCI, it's needed. Something's needed to fix the situation altogether.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. Now, the real hammer, if there's a hammer, is it Lorge? Lorga? How do you pronounce it?
Lorge, Your Honor.
Lorge, okay. The real hammer over Admiral Lorge is not that he's going to get in trouble and he's not going to be a 3-star or anything like that. He's about to retire. The real hammer is the fate of the Navy politically. The fact that this is going to cause a big hoo-ha in Congress, and the Navy and its leadership will get dragged up there and smacked around and so forth. Isn't that it?
Your Honor, that appears to be part of his concern, and those concerns were...
Well, I would think it appears to be the whole of his concern. I mean, what else is there? He's not worried about getting promoted.
Yes, Your Honor, that's what he said, although that sounds familiar, though, to the bomb-proof argument made in United States v.
Well, it does, but I'm not analogizing it. It seems to me that if we take your case, you know, at face value, what Crawford said to him was, stay out of it. The Navy's going to get in trouble. Listen to your SJA, let them, you know, and don't be political, let the courts be political, a sentiment which I read with raised eyebrows.
Your Honor, I see my time, is it?
Please answer the question.
Yes, all of those concerns were brought to bear on Admiral Lorch, and again, the way in which this becomes unlawful command influence is when it was brought to bear through an unauthorized means by the Vice Admiral, Vice Admiral Drenzi and Vice Admiral Crawford.
If Commander, what's his name, the SJA, had said the same thing, actually he did, I think, would it have been UCI?
Your Honor, not under the same analysis. It would not.
Okay, enough.
Chief Judge, may I ask a question?
Yeah.
Counsel, what should we make of the statement, don't put a target on your back? Now, we've got Admiral Crawford stating that he doesn't recall saying that. We've got Admiral Lorge saying he doesn't remember Admiral Crawford saying that. But in addition to that, we've got Admiral Lorge, doesn't he say, if he had said that, I would have taken it as a joke. So what are we to make of that statement that is fairly incendiary? Should we put any weight at all on that?
Your Honor, in terms of the specific language that was used, I think both Admiral Lorge and Admiral Crawford were unable to recall the specific language. Again, we're at a Dubé hearing years after they actually had that conversation. What is important, though, is the impression that Admiral Lorge was left with following that meeting. In his testimony, he described Admiral Crawford talking about scrutiny from, quote, the chain of command, end quote. That's in the Joint Appendix at 1066. Also, and this is what the Dubé judge found, and I think this is the most important part to go to your question, that, quote, Admiral Lorge was, quote, clearly left, end quote, with the impression that, quote, Vice Admiral Crawford believed Rear Admiral Lorge should approve the findings and sentence, end quote. And so whether he used the words target on the back or something else that later, you know, Admiral Lorge is talking about in front of Lieutenant Commander Dowling, that was the impression he was left with from Admiral Crawford's conversation, and I think that's what the court should focus on.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Major Kelly O'Neill, and along with Mr. Brian Keller, I represent the United States. Your Honors, I have three main points today. First, the conversations with the Judge Advocate General and the Deputy Judge Advocate General did not legally or factually violate Article 37. Second, those conversations were not the proximate cause of Admiral Lorge's eventual affirmation of appellant's convictions. And third, this court should overturn apparent UCI because it is in direct conflict with other case law and the code. First, going into the actual substance of the conversations. These conversations, and for purposes of this court, I can go into both, but since both conversations are at source here, I'll speak to them generally, did not violate Article 37 legally. First, as pointed out, when Admiral Crawford had a conversation, a discussion with Admiral Dorenzi, the then judge advocate, the appellant's case was not even in front of Admiral Lorge at the time. It had nothing to do with
Let's keep discussion of Admiral Dorenzi to a minimum, please, and concentrate on what this case is really about.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
I'll
switch right to Admiral Crawford. In this case, this is a situation in which was not the Deputy Judge Advocate General of the Navy on behalf of the Chief of Naval Operations coming to discuss a specific case. This was Admiral Lorge reaching out to an old colleague, a friend, someone he knew in the past and trusted in the past because he was in conflict based on the advice he was getting from his
To talk about a specific case.
Admiral Lorge did wish to talk about a specific case, yes, Your Honor.
And Admiral Crawford knew that going in.
Yes, I believe he understood there was a case that was being considered. But it's still
so important. What are we to do, counsel, in a situation like this where we have basically a collusion between the SDA and the deputy SDA to keep their boss from doing what he wants to do, right? And then on top of that, this sort of imprimatur added by the TJ. Saying the same thing, all for the same reasons. It's going to make the Navy look bad. It's going to cause an issue. It's going to cause a problem. I mean, even going so far as to give incorrect advice.
With respect to his subordinate judge advocate, SJAs, that is, if that's what's occurring, that is incorrect legal advice, number one. But secondly, unless I wouldn't classify it as collusion, but unless that incorrect advice was made with either an attempt to actually influence on behalf of either the Chief of Naval Operations or a superior...
Wait a minute. Is this mantle of command business?
In a general sense, Your Honor, only because it's what classifies the conversation itself as unlawful influence, vice, incorrect influence.
If Lorge Lorge calls Crawford on the, and says, I want to talk to you about this case that really bothers me. Crawford says, okay. They come in, they have a conversation. Crawford says, well, you're the convening authority, but I think this is going to blow up in the Navy's face, and we're going to have a big problem if you don't approve the findings and sentence in this case, or words to that effect. You know, leaving aside the target, which goes more to personal, odium, isn't that enough?
Not, no, Your Honor. Going back to the inherent difference between what could be just unlawful influence and unlawful command influence, there's a command specter because there's no...
Does there have to be a formal command-subordinate relationship for Article 37 to apply?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Okay, then what are you saying?
Well, he's called it unlawful command influence, but it's called, actually under the statute, unlawfully influencing action of the court.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you would agree that that includes unlawfully influencing the action of a convening authority?
Yes.
And any member, any person subject to the code can do that?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
That would include the staff judge advocate or the deputy staff judge advocate?
Yes, Your Honor. The difference, though, where the command perspective comes in is what makes it unlawful. A conversation between colleagues or in any sense that doesn't bring in to bear that attempt to influence or coerce by unlawful means does not fall under the...
Well, where do you draw the line then? I mean, how do we know where to draw the line between a conversation between colleagues, let's say here two admirals, where one is giving advice taken by the decision maker to do something? Where is the line drawn, particularly when it's a visit on regular business hours between one of the highest ranking attorneys in the Navy and a convening authority who has a question about a case?
It can be drawn, Your Honor, with where there's an attempt to coerce, or even if there's a direct attempt to say, you must approve the findings in this case, or you can't take specific action. A general conversation, especially when actually sought by Admiral Lorge in the context of he wasn't seeking advice from the Deputy Judge Advocate General necessarily. He was seeking advice from a colleague, a person he knew. And that's
who happens to be the number two person in the Administration of Military Justice in the Department of the Navy.
And as Senior Judge Urban pointed out, this wasn't in the Officers Club.
Doing this over two beers.
Yes, and the United States isn't saying it could never cross over into the line. It simply did not.
Okay, what with that? You're arguing, I think, that this wasn't enough to constitute UCI under 37. What more was needed? And don't tell me mantle of command.
An actual... to the persuasion to take specific action.
So is your position then that he was just lame? Right? Basically, these people said this and that the average person would have still done what they wanted to do and he just folded. Is that what your position is?
Are you speaking of Admiral Lorge, Your Honor?
Yes.
Admiral Lorge's decision was tainted by confusion, indecisiveness, and incorrect advice. It was not a good convening authority action. But it wasn't.
So then why would the United States government then support the action?
The United States government believes that this was post-trial error under RCM 1107, and it should be resolved under that type of thing. It's not that this was a perfect action. It's just that to the extent Admiral Lorge should not take action he wanted to, it wasn't caused by improper command.
How can you say that in the face of the findings of the debate judge?
With respect to the elephant in the room, the target on the back question, and more specifically, the impact of words to that effect, the record belies that finding of fact. Most importantly, because...
Well, I'm not so much concerned with the target on the back. I'm concerned with what's going to happen to Mother Navy in Congress, and we're going to get beat up again by Senator Gillibrand, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So lay off is my advice to you. Listen to Dominic, your SJA. Lay off and let the political courts clean up the mess.
Well, as far as congressional scrutiny as a general source of influence, that itself doesn't fall under the plain language of Article 37 since the members aren't subject to the code.
No, it's more than congressional scrutiny. It's more than oversight. It's an enunciated fear that this would be bad for the Navy and bad for the Judge Advocate General's department. And they'd all get in trouble.
Which you would agree, I believe, it should not be a basis for a convening authority's action on whether to approve or disprove an action.
Whether the Navy would get in trouble,
Your Honor?
It would certainly not be appropriate. But I think what's important is that what came out on the record was that it was a general conversation about congressional scrutiny.
Wait a minute, though.
Do you think it's true, though? Don't you think it's true if he disapproved the findings and sentence? Wouldn't it have been Lieutenant General Peterson, whatever his name is, Lieutenant General Franklin. The Navy?
If the basis was through the scrutiny, it could possibly be, but it certainly wouldn't be.
You think it would be well received by Senator Gillibrand?
Unlikely, Your Honor. Unlikely, but again, Congress are not people subject to the code, and so their influence is...
So, Counsel, you seem to be minimizing the findings of the DeBay military judge, but I direct you to JA page 1038, where the quote from Admiral Lorge is, quote, "I asked him if disapproving a sexual assault case would bring big scrutiny on the Navy, and Crawford said, yeah," end quote. So going back to what the Chief Judge raised some time ago, why isn't that game over right there? Why, when we're looking at cases, we've said that unfettered discretion is the key to these cases. We've got Lorge saying, I did not have unfettered discretion because of what I was told. Why isn't it game over right there?
Because, Your Honor, first off, simply confirming what basically we already know, which is that these types of situations are creating congressional scrutiny, is not the same thing as attempting to influence the actual decision. Admiral Lorge asked the question, and Admiral Crawford said yes. But what the impression that Admiral Lorge left with, and this was in his testimony, was that he felt that if he was going to do something other than approve the sentence, he had to do it right and be prepared to explain it. Now, it's not that it's not problematic that we're getting congressional scrutiny. It's just that by confirming the political landscape, which was already known to Admiral Lorge at the time, is not the same thing as attempting to influence. And that's what's required. And it jumps right back right into the proximate cause of Admiral Lorge's decision in this case, which is my next point. And that is that it's not simply that something happened or that there were words said. It's that it had to have caused the Admiral's decision in this case.
Counsel, you used the language in your introductory statements that there was no proximate cause. And I'm not aware that we have ever used, that's a legal concept, most generally found in civil law, most usually found in tort law. I've never found that in any of our other UCI cases. Are you suggesting that we adopt the civil definition of proximate cause here?
Well, yes, sir. To the extent that that's referred to in Stombach, which cites it back to Levi, which was the first case that used the term proximate cause.
So do you believe that that the convening authority in this case could withdraw his original action and substitute a new action disapproving the findings in the sentence under 1107G?
At this point, Your Honor, well, Admiral Lorge is no longer the convening authority, so it would not go back to him specifically. But could that resolve the 1107 error if a subsequent convening authority decided to? Yes.
So what should we do in a case such as this, if you're saying unlawful command influence does not apply here, you use language, I wish I could remember it all, but I can't. Essentially, you were saying that Admiral Lorge's decision here was confused and a number of other things. That doesn't give anybody a strong sense of confidence in the military justice system. So what are we to do with that from your perspective if it's not an unlawful command influence?
Well, first, resolve this under RCM 1107 and typical post-trial error.
So, you would, just to kind of walk you through this, you agree that making an action that's contrary to the action that you want to make is erroneous. And under 1107G, it says that the person that took that erroneous action, which I guess this new convening authority steps into the shoes of the old convening authority, is that correct? And it says it may be instructed by an authority acting under Article 67, which includes us, doesn't it, to withdraw the original action and substitute a corrected action?
Yes, Your Honor. And
that corrected action would reflect what the original convening authority actually wanted to do, which is disapprove the findings in the sentence.
Well, understand.
Yes or no?
Yes. The military judge found that he would have withdrawn. He likely would have withdrawn, but this is really the problem with this court resolving that at this level without sending it back down for the full.
But it says that we could do. I mean, you're saying that he took the wrong action. He didn't take the action he wanted to do. The rule says that we can make them withdraw the original action and put in a new action. Why don't we just do that based on that part of the debate hearing?
Because in the
you would prefer not to have that come down on the Navy.
I have no interest in the Navy.
How do you feel about the Coast Guard?
The United States' position concern here is not the appearance of the United States Navy. It's ensuring that appellant's rights are protected in concert with the plain language of the code. And in this case, where RCM 1107 is the proper way to evaluate this situation, under Wheelis, a low colorable showing of prejudice is required. We weren't denying there was prejudice, and it could be sent back to figure out exactly what is appropriate. Because appellant here does not have the right to a specific convening authority. He has a right to an independent convening authority fully.
But the error, right, was in the original with the original convening authority, right? Do you agree that taking the action that you didn't want to take because you thought you might get in trouble or the Navy might look bad, you'd agree that that is an erroneous convening authority action?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's what we're correcting. That's what needs to be corrected. Right, and so a correct convening authority action would be one that took the action that the original convening authority wanted to take but didn't.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so if we send it back to a different convening authority, there's the risk that they will have a different opinion, right? And so you can't correct the error.
Yeah, well, it's possible, Your Honor. The distinction here, and the distinction is that Admiral Lorge was kind of all over the map with what he wanted to do, and his ultimate
He wasn't all over the map. He seems to have been fairly consistent. He may not have had the stiffest backbone on earth. I mean, I'm not saying that it was like Roosevelt described McKinley as a chocolate eclair, but he may not have had the stiffest backbone in the United States Navy, but he seems to have been pretty consistent in wanting to bust this case.
At first, he said his concern was whether he could just send it back and inquire into the military judge's temperament or Senior Chief Barry's TBI. So there was, but he was affirmatively told he couldn't order a post-trial 39A, which was incorrect. So it shaded the rest of his determinations after that he could only approve or disapprove. Sometimes he said he would like to send it back for a new trial. Sometimes he said he would just like to disapprove it. That's the point. He was all over the map, and his ultimate set. Hindsight, what he would have done was shaped by whether
he was not all over the map in his conviction that there was something seriously wrong with findings and sentence in this case, was he?
No, certainly,
okay.
There is a finding by the debate hearing that Rear Admiral Lorge believed then and continues to believe the appellant's guilt was not proven beyond a reasonable doubt at his court martial. And if he believes that, he can't approve the finding, can he? You can't approve a finding if you think that the person isn't guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, can you?
Well, there's nowhere in the code that says he can't do that. I'm not saying that that would be the right thing to do, but there's nothing in the code that says it's unfettered discretion to do what he wanted to do. But if the court decided that that would be the way to resolve the issue as a substitute, that would certainly be appropriate.
Counsel, may I ask a question that I asked the appellant, which is, what does the meaning of by unauthorized means? You started out by saying that Admiral Crawford spoke with Admiral Lorge casually or informally. Was that conversation authorized? And by that I mean, do the terms by unauthorized means it has to be specifically prohibited, or that it has to be something for which there is authority?
I believe it means, Your Honor, it's got to be prohibited to be unlawful.
So do you agree that there was no specific authority for him to speak to the deputy? In general, convening authority does not call up the DJAG and ask for advice.
There is nothing specific that allows that, Your Honor. But if we take unlawful to mean the only thing that's lawful is what's specifically allowed, then that means you can never seek outside the chain of command just to talk through problems, to resolve conflicts, or anything else. And it's important to understand that he never communicated to Admiral Crawford that he was even having issues with his SJAs, which was the source of this conflict in general, and his confusion about what his authorities were.
May I ask another question? It's unrelated. I see your time is running out. Does the NDAA 2014 and the restrictions on the ability of the convening authority to disapprove the findings or sentence, does that affect this case if we send it back?
No, Your Honor. It would still fall under the old version of the law.
Counsel, if I may, I'd like to return to the point that Judge Ryan raised under 1107. I'm still a little unclear based on your response why her TikTok of how you would, the appropriate disposition under 1107 doesn't result in this court providing the remedy requested by appellant in this case.
Your Honor, I see my time has run out.
Answer the question.
Your Honor, this court feels that is the only way to cure the prejudice, and that this court could do that. But under Wheelis, rather
than a matter of prejudice, it's just a matter of doing what would be required by 1107. If you agree, and if we agree, that it was a incorrect convening authority's action or erroneous convening authority's action because he took the action, not that he wanted to take, but that he thought that he must take, however wrong he was, or for whatever reasons, then we order them to substitute it with an appropriate convening authority's action, doing what he said he would have originally wanted to do.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I mean, that doesn't require finding prejudice. That requires just doing what I just said.
Yes, Your Honor.
Although I think the government has conceded
that there is post-trial error, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
May it please the court, and briefly, I'd just like to clarify one thing. The appellant's position, and we agree with the government on this, that the staff judge advocate and deputy staff judge advocate can violate Article 37 if they attempt to coerce or influence in a way that's unauthorized. And second, there was unlawful command influence here, and while the government's position that an 1107 analysis could resolve the harm to Senior Chief Berry's individual case and give him the decision that Admiral Lorge would have made, there's still the impact to the public's perception on fairness here. And again, going back to a couple of the things that happened.
Is the purpose of this case to vindicate your client's rights or to vindicate some ephemeral, right of the defense bar at large?
Your Honor, without a doubt, it's to represent Senior Chief Berry and to vindicate his rights.
And you don't disagree that a resolution under 1107G would vindicate his rights, do you?
It would give him the find. Yes, Your Honor. It would give him the finding of the disapproval that he would have received otherwise. But
it would be a finding that the convening authority, for whatever reason, didn't take the action that he wanted to take.
Yes,
whether
Your
Honor. It was because he had a spine of an eclair or because of some other reason.
Yes, Your Honor. But there's the proper analysis here is still unlawful command influence under Article 37. And the remedy for that is dismissal with prejudice. This was never supposed to see the light of day. The way in which it came about was through whistleblowers. And throughout the entire process, years later, after he served the entirety of his confinement.
But if the analysis under that is less clear than the analysis that I propose, aren't you better off asking for the other resolution?
Your Honor, the ultimate resolution for Senior Chief Berry is to disapprove the finding in this case. However the court decides to do that, that's in the best interest of Senior Chief Berry, and we would respectfully ask the court for that particular.
Can I just ask you one last question, if you don't mind? Do you agree that there's a difference between someone happening to feel influenced and someone attempting to influence them?
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe the Dubay record demonstrates that Admiral Crawford attempted to influence Admiral Lorge in this case.
Counsel, why wouldn't a disposition under 1107 fully address the public's perception of the problem here, any more than finding of actual UCI or apparent UCI? The result is, in a very, very ugly process, the right thing would have been done.
Yes, Your Honor, and again, ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what Senior Chief Berry wants, is the right thing to be done.
Would it also fully address the concerns you just expressed about the public's perception of the military justice system? Wouldn't it as fully address that concern as a finding of apparent or actual UCI?
Or could it be described in the papers as a technicality?
Your Honor, I see my time has expired.
Answer the question.
I believe it's important for this court to call it what it is, what happened here, and that was that Admiral Crawford influenced the convening authority's action in Senior Chief Berry's case. That runs afoul of Article 37, and the relief that Senior Chief Berry would request is dismissal with prejudice.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both sides. Judge Erdman's travel schedule, we're going to conference this case immediately after our lunch break. So the court is in recess until a time to be imparted to counsel after we finish our conference.
Probably approximately
2 o'clock. Thank you.
All rise. Court is adjourned until 2 o'clock.